Love Osho podcast brings you the real stories of the people whose lives have been inspired and transformed by Osho. We explore why thousands of people are falling in love with Osho and where to find them. Take a deep breath and enjoy the show.
Hello and welcome to the Love Osho podcast. My name is Swaram and I'm the host. Today our guest is Swami Anand Vikrant. Vikrant took sannyas in 1988 and is a counselor and psychotherapist, trained at the Northern Illinois University, USA and Osho Multiversity, Pune, India. Vikrant is a member of the Association for Humanistic Psychology, Transpersonal Psychology and the Association for Body Psychotherapy. Vikrant is the author of 6 books and numerous articles on the awakening of consciousness and personal development. Vikrant has taught in various psychology programs, including the Department of Counseling, Adult and Health Education and Northern Illinois University, USA. He's a former research consultant on active meditations in Sydney, Australia, and has been training therapists and facilitators in humanistic transpersonal psychology for more than 20 years. Vikrant is the founder of the Experiential Center for Human Development and creator of the Returning to the Source workshops, Biodynamic Structural Massage, and Somatic Emotional Processing. Vikrant, welcome back to part 3 of our journey and discussion about Osho's influence on the world of therapy, which is a very important topic and is crucial to understand modern psychology. I think that without Osho's contribution, it's not possible to understand modern psychology. Mm-hmm. So, in part 1, we discussed the birth of the human potential movement and how the first therapists arrived to Pune to learn from Osho. Mm-hmm. In part 2, we discussed more in details the relationship between Osho and the therapists, and of course, much more. And today we will focus more on the latest part of Osho's work in relation to therapy. But just before we get into that, is there anything else that was left uncompleted that you would like to add before we get into Pune 2?
Yeah, basically, I wanted to make like a big summary of what was being offered in Pune 1, because I think that's the blueprint for what we discussed before, what happened in the ranch. And it is also the blueprint of what happened afterward in Pune 2. And it has to do with the areas that were covered. And usually these areas were coming on stages. You know, people would do certain kinds of groups first and then go to more meditative groups, et cetera, et cetera. So groups oriented to body work, it was basically the Osho used to make an emphasis on starting with the body, begin with the body. That was his phrase, exactly. So we had neo-Reichian methods like radix, bioenergetics. Then we had body awareness, sensory awareness, massage, dance, therapy, and relaxation therapy. That was like the first kind of groups that were oriented towards the working with the body. Then we had groups about opening, expansions, and emotional release. And we had gestalt, encounter, psychodrama, spontaneity group, tantra groups, and groups that basically related, were geared towards expression, emotional expression, and relating. Then we had groups that were focused on childhood issues. It was the primal group. We had rebirthing. Then we had groups of connecting with the unconscious. It was the hypnotherapy group, energy groups, direct awareness groups, healing and creativity. And then we had like the more like what we would call the last stages of the growth process that was offered in the ashram at that time. And those were groups that had somehow an Eastern orientation. So we had Kyo, Vipassana, Sazen, Intensive Enlightenment, and Satori group. So what was interesting about this is that although this wasn't necessarily planned this way, you were put into a certain process. At that time, Osho himself was advising people which groups to take. And usually it went, you know, through these stages. First, you would have like introductory groups that somehow were more like centering group that was led by Prasad, that was more about like general awareness, playfulness, and then you went deep into primal and encounter, and then you went into tantra, and then you would be guided towards sazen, vipassana, and more meditative groups somehow. So it's interesting to see that although there was a feeling of intuition and spontaneity in the whole work, there was also a certain direction in which this was going. And at some point, I even remember reading Osho talking about having like a two stages encounter groups. You know, first that would be sort of softer and then deeper, stronger, more intensive encounter group. It never happened, but it was something that was talked about. I wanted to make that summary before we go into Pune too.
No, I think it's very useful, and I didn't appreciate that there was a sort of plan and direction, because talking to the different sannyasins, they all say that when they took sannyas, they were in front of Osho during the darshan meetings. Osho would tell them, you know, go to do this group and that group, but I never really did a sort of statistical analysis to understand if there was a pattern. So you are saying that there was a sort of direction.
I mean, it's a general pattern. It wasn't that like that people were put into a box and then going through these stages, but there was a certain pattern. It would be very difficult. I mean, if you would be sent to the encounter group if you had never done any groups and it was your first time in the ashram. Usually you would be sent to centering or to intensive enlightenment. It would be like the first, usually, what would then be called introductory groups. Unless you were a well-known, famous therapist who had done a lot of groups and you came to the ashram, usually therapists would be sent to encounter groups, as we discussed before.
Okay, that's great. You know, thanks for bringing this up. So moving to Pune 2, yes. Let's see what happened during this time. You know, it's the latest phase of Osho's work, 1988-1990. And it seems to me, talking again to the sannyasins and many therapies, that this latest phase was very creative. So give us a sense of what was going on.
It was extremely creative. I mean, people had been away from Osho for a while. I mean, it's actually from 87, I think, from late 87 until 1990. And all these people were coming and all these therapists were bringing their approaches. And what was interesting at that point, it's that more subtle, somehow less confrontational approaches were integrated to the work of the commune at that time. It wasn't ashram anymore, although we called it ashram until probably mid-2000s. But the word was used commune. You know, that was the word that Osho spoke about. He said, this is not an ashram, it's a commune, etc. So we had this very confrontational groups, a very confrontational way of working through the layers of your unconscious or your repressions. And lots of new inputs were brought in to work through these layers without confronting your defenses. This was new. Krishnananda, for instance, who developed the codependency groups in the commune, he brought this approach. And what was interesting is that, again, Osho had this sort of university idea about how these things had to work. And then you had the different faculties that I will read them in a moment, where people then were clustered into different groups and they were experimenting and working among themselves. And there was a lot of experimenting. I mean, the mystery school directed by Kavisha, they had something called, I think it was the Golden Circle. I'm not sure the exact word, I may be mistaken. But there was an inner group that was experimenting all the time with all new techniques and new groups and new approaches. In the 70s, there wasn't a lot of experimentation before offering a group. I mean, you would be a therapist and Osho would say, hey, would you like to lead a group? And so like, yeah, okay, sure. How would you like your group to be called? Or, okay, then you will lead a so-and-so group, like a spontaneity group, and it will be called Sahaj. And on you went, you know, you would get sometimes very little instructions. At the beginning, some people got instructions, not all of them, but on you went. I mean, so the group was offered next day, next week, And who knew what would happen? But this time in Pune too, before offering a group, there was a lot of experimentation, a lot of creativity, and people were doing a lot of work on themselves within these clusters or these each one of the schools of the Osho Multiversity. Here we had the Osho Multiversity. Osho changed the name from university, that was the name that was used in Pune One and at the ranch, and the new word was multiversity. I don't know if it's multi or multi, but okay, multiversity is the way I say. And then you had these different schools that were working, and then he introduced the meditative therapies. And I think this was a big shift. And Osho gave a lot of energy and a lot of importance to the meditative therapies. Mystic Rose, No Mind, Born Again, and the forgotten art of talking to your, I'm translating from Spanish, so I'm trying, the talking to your mind and body, that was only be led by women. And it was an explosion of creativity. I mean, we had lots of people. Of course, Osho always talked about the 10,000 Buddhas, but actually there was no way you could fit 10,000 people in the ashram at that time. The 10,000 Buddhas were more like 3,500, 4,000, 5,000 Buddha. I think the maximum amount of people that were counted at the commune was 9,000 people in 92. I think was the biggest number.
Wow, that's so, a lot of people. You know, sorry,
that's a lot of people.
But it's incredible. I mean, nearly 10,000. Yeah. By the way, the 10,000 Buddhas. If you're interested in that, Veena, a very early disciple of Osho, she wrote.
Yeah, I know her.
She did a research on that, and it's fascinating. It has a very deep meaning, and it's traced back to an ancient tradition going back to China.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, oh, I can link you up with Veena to discuss further.
Yes. So, and then we had the faculties, and I will read through that. So, because I think this was like his final legacy in a way. So, Swami Satyavedant, who was this Indian sannyasin who had studied and had degrees from the United States, was the one who had like the highest university qualification. So he was always somehow put in charge of being the chancellor of the multiversity. So we had the school for Zen and martial arts. So it was basically Sazen and all kinds of martial arts and swords and Sazen archery, etc. Then we had the school for centering. The school for centering was mainly centered around Gurdjieff work and Sufi work. Then we had the Center for Transformation. The Center for Transformation was the part that was in charge of what used to be the therapy departments or the groups department as such. And we had breath groups, primal, tantra, pulsation, relating, counseling, hypnosis, Zen encounter. And what we would say, that was the school that dealt with the Western psychotherapy influence. Then we had the International Academy of Healing Arts. And here you had massage, rebalancing, divine healing, Tibetan pulsing, everything related to healing and working with the body. See? Then there was the School of Creative Arts. And the creative arts, as you can understand, had to do with creativity. So we had the School of Performance Arts, the Institute for Fine Arts, the School of Music. All this was clustered around the School of Creative Arts. Then it was the Mystery School that dealt with more esoteric part of the work. So you had Neo-Reiki, channeling, chakra healing, and crystal healing and everything, palm reading, tarot, etc. Everything that was somehow more esoteric. And also there was, and this was a latest addition, was this the Faculty for Liberation. The Faculty for Liberation had to do basically with the one of the latest groups that were developed and by Osho, which was Women's Liberation Group and Men's Liberation. And actually, it's a little bit funny how the story came out, because Osho was increasingly becoming aware, especially related to the female stuff around it, about the need to be needed of women. That's how he called it. The deep conditioning of women about their need to be needed. So he decided, he asked Hasia, and Hasia then asked Waduda to create a group geared towards women's liberation. And as the story goes, the men in the ashram felt a little bit uneasy, you know, that their partners were participating in this group. I mean, what if they felt liberated from them, you know? And after the group, they didn't want to be with them anymore. So there was all this, like, this little uneasiness about it. And actually, and even until recently in the resort, when the last day of the women's group, they would invite men, they would collect men from the ashram, from the resort, and they would bring them to the group, and they would have like some sort of sensory awareness session, and then some party and dancing between men and women. And I remember, because I was selected as one of the guys that were invited to the last day of the women's group, and I remember standing there with KP and lots of other guys, like waiting online outside the pyramids to be invited, and all dressed up, and like somehow waiting, you know, to come to the women's group. And it was fun. So then it was brought to Osho's attention, you know, that guys were feeling a bit uneasy. So he said, okay, then we're going to do a men's liberation group. And that was, Wadud was in charge of creating somehow the group. So these two groups became part of what was known as the Faculty for Liberation. And other things that I think are important apart from this, the different schools and the meditative therapies, was the creation of new in-depth groups that somehow dealt with childhood and teenage issues, like Fresh Beginnings. Well, it started already at the end of the ranch. That was a one-month group. I had the pleasure to be in that group. It was a residential group. It was 15 days of primal and 15 days of tantra or sexual liberation or dealing with adolescence and teenage issues. It was a great group. I mean, you were with this group of people for 1 month residential. You were in isolation. You weren't supposed to talk to anyone. I mean, you would come out of the group looking at the ground, you know, if you were doing primal with your little stuffed animal. And that was a fantastic group. Then it was shortened because in the last years, especially because people wouldn't stay, have neither the resources nor the time to stay a whole month, you know, doing a group. I used to go originally to Pune for 3 months, and the last times I go for 15 days. So I'm not going to be and have the time. So it was reduced to 7 days. So 7 days primal and 7 days tantric intensive, I think was the name that was given lately. Another thing that was, I think, was also very important was the Anti-Fischer-Hofmann process, that now it's called the Freedom Process, that lasted, if I'm not mistaken, 14 days. Now I think they have shortened it to 7 days. And it was an evolution from the Fischer-Hofmann process. I don't know if you've heard about it. It's a deep process of dealing with your childhood issues and the relationship with your parents. Maprem Turiya participated in the group with Bob Hoffman. I think it was in Germany. And then she reported back to Osho what the group was about. And Osho instructed her to do a group based on that work, but taking it a little bit further, because Osho said that Bob Hoffman's process strengthened the ego, so to include somehow meditation. And Turiya didn't feel so much to go into it. So she gave the group to Prabha, and Prabha had been personally trained by Bob Hoffman in the Fischer-Hofmann process. So she created the Anti-Fischer-Hofmann process, and then Prabha gave it to Tarika, and Tarika changed the main name into the Freedom Process. And it's still being offered, I think, every February at the resort. So I think those are very interesting additions at that time in Pune too. And I would say that in general, what we had was this enormous amount of creativity happening and a huge amount of therapists coming, Osho then leading meditations. I mean, you have to understand, Osho stopped leading meditations around, I would say, 1974. And it was Swami Ananda Tirtha who took over leading the meditations at that time. So again, Osho was leading meditations at the end of the Zen discourses. You know, we had the gibberish, let go, and silence that was then introduced into the no-mind meditation. I think it was a fantastic time. And I think it was a creative time. And there were lots of people coming to Pune. And there's a huge offer of groups and sessions. And I had some old catalogs that I was going through, and I was stunned to see the amount of work and group that were offered each month. So that's what comes to mind at this moment.
Okay. Maybe this is my take on it, as if Osho was aware that he was leaving the body. So as if he wanted to speed up the process and do the maximum to leave a legacy. And at the same time, a lot of therapists had a chance to experiment through the years, starting in the 70s. So it was almost like the fruition time where everything was converging and there was this explosion of creativity. So you mentioned few groups which are even today still quite famous, like codependency, the men's and women's liberation,
yes.
And the freedom liberation. Maybe not. What I'm interested, so to understand a little bit more how Osho was directing the creation of this new group. So was it like the therapist coming up with an ideas, or Osho was giving directions, or a combination?
Well, it was very different depending. I mean, for instance, Mystic Rose. Mystic Rose was Osho commissioned to Leela to create the Mystic Rose. And then she would report back to him, and he would make corrections in instructions and things, and would be advising. He would be guiding that group. The Women's Lib group, I think, was mostly created by Waduda, if I'm not mistaken, although it was commissioned to Hasia. But Hasia, she wasn't a therapist, so she didn't have the knowledge to create that. I'm not sure how much input Osho had on that. Other groups, Osho had no input whatsoever. He would say, lead such group and give this name to the group. And in other cases, Osho would have nothing to do neither with the names of the groups or the creation of certain groups. So Osho had more idea of giving certain general instructions for the faculties, but it would depend. The meditative therapies, of course, he was very involved with them. I mean, but as far as I know, he wouldn't personally meet any of these therapists. They would communicate through letters through the main office, as far as I understand.
Okay, so let's talk more about the meditative therapist. Yes. Because I think this is very important. It's probably, you know, the last meditation left by Osho is the talking to the forgotten language of the body-mind. Of course, you know, the mystic cross, the no mind and born again. In light of what we discussed so far, and again, this is my own interpretation, I see as if in Pune 1, therapists had a role more as a facilitators of a process, of a group. Then we discussed that after Rajneeshpuram, some therapists move away and they emphasized more their independence and they wanted to be more free to experiment and create their own things.
Yes.
And now with the meditative therapists at the end, as if we are going back to a less prominent role of the therapist itself and more on the process of the meditation. And
I would say that was a movement that was continued by the inner circle of the management team until today. Who is leading the group became not important. What became important was the process. And this, I think, started with Osho, with the meditative therapist. And it started because, of course, Osho, he wasn't available anymore. So the therapists were somehow the recipients of the psychological transference of the sannyasins, you know. And you had people like in the 70s or in the 80s that were, I don't know, closer to Amitabh, or they resonated more with Tirtha, and somebody resonated more with Sumendra or with Rajen or with Viresh or with Sudha. You know, those were very prominent therapists and people who were already at the height of their careers and fame even before they came to Osho. It's not as strange because also they brought their own people. I mean, Tirtha and Sumendra brought the whole human potential movement from Europe back to Osho. Viresh brought the people from the therapeutic communities to Osho. So it was, and these were charismatic guys, you know, and they kept on being charismatic even after they left Osho. So with a meditative therapist, who was leading Mystic Rose was not the issue. You weren't into Mystic Rose to be or experience the magic or the wisdom or the charisma of this therapist in particular. It was about the process. And Osho made it very clear that what was important now was the process and the individual some way. So who was leading it, it wasn't an issue. And these three new meditations, Born Again, Gibberish, and Mystic Rose, included emotional work in some dimension. So in Mystic Rose, you had, you know, tears and laughing, and I mean, which was in the beginning when these instructions came out, people were going like, what? I mean, we're going to like laugh for 3 days for no reason at all. It's like, how you do that? You know, we're going to cry for 3 days for no reason at all. Like, not even like going into my trauma or childhood issues or relationship with my parents or former partners. But it worked. And it works until today. I don't know if you've done it. And I mean, if anybody who hasn't done it, I highly recommend it. And then we had No Mind, which was basically throwing out your, you know, conceptualization process, your garbage, as Osho used to say. And then we had Born Again, that had somehow a childhood issue or primal dimension to it, although it wasn't about going into the pain, but going into the playfulness of being a child. And yeah, it was a meditative therapy. It was a therapeutic meditation. It wasn't about sitting and trying to distance yourself from the content of your mind, but it was about experientially going through some of your own emotional dimensions. So I think that was a huge contribution, because Osho became known all over the world because of Dynamic. And the appeal that Dynamic had for people who were in the human potential movement was exactly the cathartic dimension of it. You know, people who were into primal, like the Janovian approach of dynamic meditation. The people who were into Reichian or Neon-Reichian work, they liked the Reichian approach of dynamic meditation, that it wasn't about repression, it was about expression. And Osho made a lot of emphasis that always, if you had a choice between repressing, sitting, you know, in stiff, rigid meditation and repressing and expressing, go for expression. And then this whole movement started more and more to happen. Of course, there were still charismatic and important group leaders in the commune, but I think this idea was somehow taken by the inner circle, in the sense of who was leading the group was not the issue, but what the group or the seminar or the course was about was the focus. And then from the year 2000 on, I think it shifted even more, in the sense that not only is not about the group, it's not only about the therapist, it's also in a way not about Osho, it's about you. And I think that's magnificent, in my own personal opinion. I know there's been a lot of controversy about it, but in my personal opinion, I think Osho's way or Osho's vision or Osho's path or however you want to call it, it's not about Osho. It's about waking up. It's about you. It's about growth. And Osho, as he used to say, is the finger pointing towards the moon. And in that sense, you have, if you go now to Pune, most of the people are not sannyasins. And they have an inspiration from Osho, but they don't go there to connect with Osho. They go there to connect with themselves. And Osho becomes a door towards that. And I remember something that Osho used to say at the end of the 70s, where you said, if you come to my ashram, you will not find here any guru. Here you will find yourself. And I think that's quintessential to Osho's, to my understanding of Osho's way. I know that there are as many understanding as Osho's way as sannyasins or people inspired by Osho are, you know, because we all understand a part of it through our own mind or our own experiences or our own feelings. But in my understanding, it is about growth. It's not about having a shrine or a temple where we can worship Osho, but it's about using his message, using his wisdom as a door to find your own truth, in a way.
Look, this is very beautifully articulated, but I would like to leave that for another time discussion and keep the conversation on the therapy and the meditation. I think you made a beautiful parallel between dynamic meditation and the meditative therapies at the end, because that's where I was traveling also with my thoughts, because I feel like dynamic is therapeutic. And at the end, these meditative therapies are probably the best example of the combination, of the famous combination and contribution brought by Osho of synthesis between therapy and meditation. And at the same time, is empowering people because it doesn't rely on the special status of the therapist. So it somehow takes the therapist's role a little bit out of the window, even though, of course, there is still a lot of room for the therapists in their own specialities. But, you know, if you do Mystic Rose, I haven't done that personally. I've done the No Mind a couple of times, but I've heard people completely transformed. I've done Dynamic for many, many years, and that really completely transformed me more than any therapy groups or one-to-one sessions.
Definitely. It's my experience too. So I can bail for that. I mean, absolutely. I think dynamic it's genius. I mean, it's a fantastic method. And it's a technique that can give a taste of a meditative space beyond the mind to anyone. You know, it's not like Zazen where you need to sit for years before you can get a glimpse of what is, you know, to be beyond your own thought process. I mean, the first time I did dynamic, I was 20 years old. It was the first time I had an experience of being present without having my mind interpret what was going on outside myself. I had never had an experience like that. And I was one dynamic, and I was like, what is this? You know? So, yeah, I think I want to take something that you were saying in the sense of being self-sufficient. I think that was also Osho's approach. It is very funny because if you look at the whole history of his work, including therapy and including personal growth, it is a work that being a disciple within this context, you go through him back to yourself. And I think I talked about it the first time we had this conversation. And it's like, yes, you connect with Osho, you are in love, you are marveled by this human being, and you want to surrender, and you are open. And then he uses that energy, and somehow he managed to take it back to yourself. And all the techniques that he developed are not dependent on him. And I think that's beautiful. I mean, even nowadays, with people that have other techniques that somehow have that level of self-sufficiency, like TM, for instance, like Transcendental Meditation, still you need to be initiated, you need to do some kind of puja and ritual when you're initiated into this. So somehow the Maharishi is still there. You can do dynamic led by anyone, and you will have the benefit of this meditation, of this experience, even if you've never heard of Osho. And I think that's incredibly beautiful to do something where you don't let the people who have loved you and being your disciples hooked on you, but you say, hey, take this, and you may get a glimpse of where I am.
Yes, now definitely it's true that anyone can benefit from dynamic, even if they don't know anything about Osho. But in my experience, and then I'd like to move on, I think if you are formally initiated into sannyas, and if you love Osho, if you're connected to Osho, there is something extra that you can benefit from.
Absolutely.
To explain, I don't know how it works, but that's for me and many people I know.
For me too. So we agree on that one.
Okay, we are on the same page on that. Okay, great. So now let's see, unless you have something else to discuss on Puna too, but I also want to see what happened in the last 30 years, because Osho left a huge legacy. You know, as we discussed, it was such a creative explosion of different approaches, ideas, and workshops and therapies and so on. And Osho left the body in 1990, and now we are in 2020. So what has happened in the last 30 years?
I think one thing that I haven't mentioned that I think it's important to mention is the institute, the Osho Institute, that were developed outside Pune. I'm thinking at this moment the Hume University in Holland that were successful in their own right. I'm thinking about Miasto. I'm thinking about Cologne, Utah in Germany, and other institutes that I can't remember them at this moment that somehow had their time and then faded away. And they continued to do this work. And I think it was very interesting in taking Osho's work into the work. Because one of the things about the influences of Osho's work in Western psychology is that what he did not remain confined to his ashram or his commune or the Osho Multiversity. It spread out. I mean, you can get rebalancing trainings or sessions anywhere in the world, for instance. You can get Osho meditations anywhere in the world. And of course, he helped to transform what we understand, the nature of groups and therapies in a scope way beyond his work. I mean, for instance, what Margot Anand has done in the world of Tantra, for instance. This approach to encounter, where you include transpersonal, you use confrontation and encounter techniques, not only to confront yourself, but also to take yourself to spaces beyond your ego. And what Anisha Dillon developed, for instance, pulsation neuroration therapy. So what happened after Osho left his body was that, okay, everything kept on working in the ashram. And as the time went by, many of the therapists started to immigrate and do their own work in their own way and taking this work to different Osho meditation centers and institutes all over the world. And also still happened this integration, you know, Turiya, and she went and did the Kalindi work, you know, the miracle of love. And out of that, she created the Path of Love, which is extremely successful and famous nowadays. And she's leading it with Rafia and other people like Satyarthi, is leading it in Pune still. And so after the work, I mean, you have to understand all these therapists were in Pune mainly because of Osho. I mean, something that people don't know usually is that no therapy ever got paid for doing his work in Pune. I mean, no one ever got paid except the people who the Indian workers who were helping maintaining the work. If you had an important job in the ashram or in the commune or in the resort, you were given a food pass, a room perhaps, and some robes, but that was about it. No one ever profited from it, and no one ever got paid. So you have to understand, and you have these people who were in Pune living the whole time. Sometimes they spent 3-4 months in the therapy chambers underground, hardly seeing the daylight, you know, doing trainings in pulsations or whatever was this emotional work that could not be done at the surface because of the noise and the neighbors and whatever. So finally, they started to emigrate and they started to take their work and get a living out of it, which wasn't something that they usually were doing in Pune. They couldn't live out of it. I mean, you had to bring your own resources or you would get a room and food pass if you were doing something that was important. And they started to make money and make a living out of leading their groups, which was something that wasn't happening. In the 70s, no therapists were going to the West to do groups and then come back. I mean, I'm talking about stable therapists from the ashram. There was one thing that happened, which was in London, the March event at Café Royal, which was the only time that the famous therapist from the ashram in Pune came and led a 2-3 days event. You know, but it was the only time. There was not this movie, this going back and forth. And then so people, they would go to Pune, they would be recognized by the participants and participants who had meditation centers, or they would offer to organize groups for them back in their countries. So then people started to do these tours, you know. So we had Shakura, who was leading primal therapy, going, who is also Italian, going from one country to the next. And then Russia was opening, and Taiwan was opening, and Japan was opening more. And lately, China was opening, and we had Anisha doing pulsation trainings, and then we had the Tantra groups going over. So what happened basically was that there was this expansion of the work. It took wings. The work that was done in Pune, the experimentation that was done in Pune, what was developed there was taken into the world. And I would say that was the most remarkable thing that happened from 1990 on. The faculties and the multiversity with the structure that Osho had set up lasted, I think, until 1999, I think. In the year 2000, this was dismantled. As I understand, mainly because there wasn't enough people participating in groups. People were going for shorter and shorter period of times. When I got there the first time in 95, people usually would stay in Pune between 3 to 6 months. That was the common thing. As it moved away from the commune structure, moved into the resort structure, people were staying less and less time. And then what happened was also that people didn't have the energy or the resources, also prices came up, to invest in long groups and staying a long time. And also, so the therapists didn't want to stay huge seasons, 6 months there. So there were less participants in the groups. And I think it was in the year 2001 or 2002 that the multiversity was restructured. So instead of having all these faculties, you would just have groups going on through areas like what happened basically in Pune One in the 70s. But I think the most important thing was the expansion of the work, how it was taken all over the world to institutes and meditation centers. And then, of course, there was the whole opening of Eastern Europe, you know, behind the Iron Curtain, Russia, Lithuania, and all these former Soviet republics that opened up to, they were eager and thirsty for Osho's work.
Absolutely. I think that's a great development of Osho's work, coming out of Pune and spreading all over the world, especially in those countries where previously there were either Osho was censored or it was just simply not known. But at the same time, as you mentioned, Pune stopped at some point to be the center of the experimentation and the meeting point of all the therapists that not they were developing the work, but they were also meeting, and I would guess they would talk in, they would exchange opinion, experiences, etc., etc. So this inevitably led them to, I would assume, to just rely on themselves and just carry on the work either through other, you know, teachers, or just based on their experience. So, I would like to know, like, in the latest maybe 10 years or so, since Pune stopped to be the melting pot, the center, the gravity, how the therapists are now lately in the last few years evolving their work?
Yes. Well, something else that happened, and it also had to do with this movement of decentralizing the work in Pune, then you had the festivals. That didn't exist before. I mean, while Osho was alive, if there was a festival, it was in Pune. There was not, like, nobody would dare to do a festival in California, an Osho festival, you know. And Osho was very, very adamant about the fact that whatever work was happening outside Pune was a way towards Pune. So there was, for instance, there was no permission to do trainings in Osho meditations anywhere except in Pune. And Osho was very clear on that. So that was the center. And then you had the festivals, and you had Afros, for instance, then there was Corfu, and then it was the Italian festival, and the festival in Spain, and the festival in Lithuania, and then the festivals in Russia and Ukraine. And so what happened was that Pune stopped being the meeting point of sannyasins all over the world, which usually happened in was the winter time, was December to early March, when it was the weather was nice, because after March you had the heat, which was unbearable. Then it was the monsoon, which was, as you can imagine, very wet. And so the high season, as it was called, which was from December to early March, stopped being the moment or the meeting point. So it was integrated into festivals, and people would go for the European summer. you know, because from December to January, it is our summer for the Southern Hemisphere, but people are in winter in Europe. So people also use their summer holidays to go to Corfu or to Afros or to go to all these festivals. And so somehow it got decentralized. So, and so also the therapists started to go and offer groups to all these places, you know, and I think it's a beautiful movement, you know. I never understood, and then again, I'm very clear what is my interpretation and what Osho said himself, and this is my interpretation. My interpretation was that Osho never really wanted the ashram or the commune or the resort to remain like a closed thing. I remember him saying, I would like people to come here for a season, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, renew themselves, and then go back into the work and take this into the work. So I think personally, I like this movement. I like that the therapists are spread all over the world. Of course, also there were issues with the administrations, issues with the inner circle, issues with a new movement that happened from the year 2000. There was issues with the trademark, and that I'm sure you're aware of that. So I think there were personal issues also that somehow created this movement, where you don't have to go to Pune. I don't know if you've been to Pune. Have you been to Pune?
Yes, I've been. First time was 1999. So It was 9 years after Osho left the body. So it was already different, but still it was juicy. There were a lot of people. The energy was very high. There were lots of young people. And then I went back in the 2000. And last time I was there, maybe 3-4 years ago. And I think it might be the last time, just because it was high season, but there were maybe not there were not many people. I didn't feel it very juicy, you know?
I go there every year, if I can, and I have the resources. And of course, it's not the same as it was in the 90s. But for me, at least, it's still the place that I most want to be in the world if I have the time and the resources to go there. Yeah, and there is definitely less people. But the energy for me is still there. For me, it's still the Buddha field. But on the other side, all this movement that has been happening, I think it's also beautiful. I like that it spread out, you know, that we don't have one place or one center, that we don't have a Mecca. And this, again, is my personal opinion. I am always very suspicious of these somehow holy centers, you know, that remain separated from the world, like the Mecca, or, you know. So I like this idea that the work is out there, you know, anywhere, in every country. And I think it's beautiful.
Yeah, no, I think I agree with you. It's a very positive attitude. Yeah. And it's also the reality of it. You know, it's true that Osho now is spread everywhere. But on the other hand, I feel like something is lost in the sense of that laboratory that was Pune 1 and even Pune 2, perhaps even more. Yes. And do you see, and the world of personal growth, as it's called today, personal development, self-growth, has grown quite a lot. It actually has become a big business. As far as I'm aware, Esalen is still alive, and there are many more schools, many more approaches have come up, even not directly related with Osho, even though I'm sure they're all influenced in a way or another by Osho or people who studied from sannyasins.
Yes.
Where do you see, if there is anything today that can be remotely compared to Pune? What I'm trying to think of, if you know of any place that can be like the laboratory of experimentation.
No, I don't think. And even Esalen is not what Esalen was in the 60s and 70s and early 80s. No, I think the world has changed. The times have changed. When the work in Esalen started in 63, it was the first time in the history of humanity that people approach psychology to grow, to learn about yourself. Before that, people approach psychology or psychological work to heal yourself mentally. So, you know, there was a jump there. It was there was this expansion that happened, that of something that had never happened before in the history of of humanity. And the same happened in Pune in the 70s, when all these therapists approached Osho. There was another jump, another expansion, another explosion, where people were taken to a place that had never happened before in the history of humanity. It was the first time that in a systematic way, meditation was brought with psychotherapy, you know, and it was conceived as a bird with two wings, you know. And of course, there was a lot of experimentation and a lot of work and a lot of pioneer work that changed psychology and that changed humanity as such. I was the other time looking at some figures about estimates of how many people might have been affected by Osho's work during the time that Osho was alive. And it was thought that, and we're not talking only about sannyasins, about 2 million people, you know, were in some way profoundly touched by Osho's work. I mean, if you look at the history of the spiritual masters, he was definitely the most effective one in reaching as many people as possible while he was alive, you know. I mean, you had Buddha, you had Lao Tse, you had, you know, Kozan or whoever, or Jesus, but they were very famous in their locality, you know. They were never a world phenomenon. I mean, Buddha never affected 2 million people. I mean, he affected a couple of bhikkhus that were hanging around with him. And the spread of Buddhism happened, I don't know, 300 years after his death. And you had in his lifetime, Osho was a magnet that affected the way we understand human psyche. I mean, it even goes beyond psychological work. I mean, what he did was he brought forward systematizing something that had never done before in this way. I think we're still riding on the ripples of that. I don't know of any other place where that experimentation is happening with a passion, with a love. I mean, you have people with other gurus or spiritual teachers, perhaps having experiences that are similar to the people who were with Osho in the 70s. I'm thinking of people who are close to Muji, but all this is not even compared to what Osho was saying. I mean, Muji is part of a tradition that comes from Papaji and that comes from Raman Maharshi. So, and it's basically the same structure, you know, satsang and this Advaita questioning of your inner experience, etc. But like what happened with Osho, I don't think so. No, I think we are still riding on this ripple. That's my feeling. You know, it was like you threw this huge stone into this lake, and we're still going like this, you know, at the edges of the lake.
Okay, now that's beautiful. It helps me also to kind of relax a bit and understand and digest what's happening today, because as you say, Osho was this explosion of consciousness. It's like an atomic bomb, and we're still kind of digesting what he injected into the consciousness.
Yeah, and what's happening now, and this it's even beyond the world of therapy, is that everyone who was somehow touched with Osho is trying to share what each one of us understood Osho was trying to share. When people ask me if I'm sharing Osho's work, I say, I can't share Osho's work. Only Osho can share Osho's work. I can share what Osho awoke in me. That's what I'm sharing. My understanding of what I think or feel he was doing. You know, so I think each one or everyone who's working with people in some way or another who have been transformed or influenced by Osho, what we are doing is that. You know, we're not sharing Osho. We can't share Osho. Only he could have shared himself. We're sharing our own understanding and what he created in us. And I think that's a beauty too.
Yes, I think if we all bear that in mind, there would be many more collaborations rather than conflicts, like often we see even in the world of sannyas.
Yes.
Okay. So for today, I think it's plenty of beautiful content that we discussed. And I want to know about your work, and I have other questions on this topic, of course. And you are an expert, reminding again everyone that you conducted a 10-year research, interviewing lots of people, culminated into a book. Unfortunately, is only in Spanish, but the title in English could be translated as something like The Journey of Therapy from Osho to, from Esalen to Osho, something like that.
It's called Osho in the Path from Esalen to Pune, a story or a history of humanistic transpersonal psychology. That would be the name. It's in Amazon anyway, so it's a, as an ebook if any Spanish-speaking viewer of yours can wants to see it.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I'll link the book on the show notes of all the episodes. And and we will have a part four, kind of summarizing and trying to, you know, get to the bottom of this long journey and also discussing more in details your work and some kind of ideas on terms of new projects and work that can be done with the therapy.
I think one thing that I know it's that I would like to stress at some point if we meet again to speak would be to somehow summarize my understanding of what I think it was exactly Osho's contribution from a theoretical point of view to Western psychology. I think that there's something he there that it's important. There's a gem there as far as my understanding goes.
Definitely. That was part of my list of questions.
Good.
Okay, Vikram. So thank you so much. And I look forward to the next and final episode. For now, there might be more because there is so much to discuss with you. And but for now, let's leave it there.
Okay. Thank you very much. And it's been a pleasure, as always, talking to you. I send you a nice, warm, sunniest hug.
Likewise. Lots of love. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it and leave a review. Visit loveosho.com for more episodes, blogs, or to connect with us.